Well, we're following an ongoing situation where the prime minister of Turkey says that the country is in the midst of an attempted coup. There are reports of gunfire in the capital of Ankara. There's even an F-16 fighter jets that are flying low over the city and in Istanbul. They're seeing military vehicles and soldiers blocking bridges over the city's Bosphorus River. Social media shut down in the country. Facebook, Twitter, state TV also appears to have been shut down. And the prime minister says this is all the doing of a small group inside the country's military who are behind the attempted coup. The Turkish military now claiming that they have indeed taken over the government. But that, of course, all not confirmed. Joining me now is Laura Wells, who's a freelance reporter in Istanbul.
Well, hey, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of Porkin's Great Game. As always, I am your co-host, Pierce Redman, and you can find this podcast and every other podcast by going to PorkinsPolicyReview.com. And joining us, as he does, every month, but this time twice in a month, is our good friend Christoph Gehrmann. Christoph, how are you?
Hi, Pierce. Thanks. I'm fine. I think we should probably preface this episode by saying that we decided to do this very spontaneous, and we haven't put a lot of preparation into this episode as we usually do. So I hope our listeners will forgive us for not being as well prepared and as thorough in our analysis as we usually are.
Yeah. So again, right, as Christoph said, we should preface this by saying this is a special episode of Porkin's Great Game. And we decided to do this because of course, the momentous events that took place on the night of July 15th. So for anyone out there that is, I guess, living under a rock, on the night of July 15th, a faction within the Turkish military attempted to seize control of Turkey. Now, tanks, assault helicopters, and even F-16s were all mobilized by the coup plotters. The plotters temporarily gained control over some of the news outlets, including TRT, which is a Turkish state-run media, as well as some very key positions in and around Ankara, as well as Istanbul. So we're talking about some of the major bridges, things like that. So Erdogan and his allies were, of course, quick to respond and took to the airwaves. First, we had the Prime Minister, Yildirim, who told the public that this was a small faction within the military. This was not the entire military that was trying to take over. And he urged the nation that him and Erdogan were still in power. Now, Erdogan famously or infamously told the people via FaceTime on an iPhone that he, again, was still in control and that Gulen was behind the coup attempt. Now, he said this while he was on vacation in Marmaris, which is on the Mediterranean coast. And he also urged the people of Turkey to go out and protest against this attempted takeover by the Gulenist movement. And of course, he referenced, those in Pennsylvania can't dictate the will of the country. And of course, it's a direct reference to Gulen, who, of course, lives up in the Poconos. Now, clashes erupted between soldiers, protesters, and the police. We had everything from helicopters firing on soldiers, as well as key military facilities, including Turkish intelligence, MIT. Police arresting members of the armed forces. Parliament was bombed at one point. And when all was said and done, somewhere around 200 people were killed. Over 1,400 people were wounded. And that night alone, over 2,000 soldiers were detained. Now, these numbers have increased tremendously. The last count I had is somewhere around 6,000 or 7,000 soldiers and government officials were detained or arrested in connection to the coup plot. Many of these were fairly high-ranking generals. Now, we have yet to discover who was the mastermind inside Turkey behind this. But as I said, it is believed that these were several high-ranking generals, many of which were in the Air Force. So the biggest general to be arrested in connection to this would be General Akın Öztürk, who was a former commander of the Air Force. So that's pretty high up. Now, there's also some other people, General Aydın Huti, was a commander of the Second Army combating terrorism in the Southeast. We have a Lieutenant General Erdal Özturk, who was the Third Army Corps commander for Istanbul. We also have Muharrem Koz, former legal advisor to the chief of the military staff. He has been arrested in connection with this, as well as 1/3 of brigadier generals and 10 major generals were also detained. Now, as I said, this basically kind of ended the night that it began. But Christoph, I'm going to throw it back to you because there are definitely some more details here. So flesh out a little bit the sort of general outline of the events that took place on July 15th and some of the more interesting aspects of this.
Yeah, sure. So as far as we now know, this all started on Friday afternoon. According to recent Turkish media reports, Turkey's National Intelligence Organization, MIT, which is run by Erdogan's close associate Hakan Fidan, became aware of an imminent coup attempt at around 4 p.m. local time. And Fidan then held a secret meeting with Turkish Chief of Staff, Hulusi Akar, and two more generals and briefed them. Chief of Staff Akar then sent orders to all army factions to shut down the airspace and halt troop movements. And this, of course, alarmed the coup plotters, and they decided to launch their operation immediately instead of launching it at 3 a.m. later that night, as originally planned, which would have made a lot more sense. If you're ever going to launch a coup, do it in the middle of the night and not on Friday afternoon. But the coup plotters obviously didn't have much choice given the circumstances, and they went ahead with their plan. Chief of Staff Akar didn't want to leave his headquarters, where he was then taken hostage later that day. The coup plotters also tried to detain Interior Minister Efkan Ala in Ankara by luring him to a high-level security meeting in the military headquarters shortly after 5 p.m. But Interior Minister Ala didn't show up because he was too busy, and later he was stuck in Ankara's Esenboga Airport. Not going to the meeting perhaps saved his life, because the top counterterrorism official responsible for Turkey's so-called fight against ISIS went to a similar meeting at the presidential palace in Ankara, and he was later found with his hands tied behind his back and shot in the neck. So the coup plotters, they did try to do the right thing by going after the civilian leadership, but this proved to be more difficult than they thought. The most important target, President Erdogan, was not in Ankara, he was on holiday in the resort of Marmaris in the southwest of the country. And as the coup began unfolding, Erdogan got a call from General Ümit Dündar, the commander of the First Army in Istanbul. And General Dündar briefed Erdogan on the latest developments and persuaded him to fly to Istanbul instead of trying to reach Ankara. In Ankara, the coup plotters were more or less in control. But in Istanbul, on the other hand, Erdogan had home court advantage because he served as mayor of Istanbul from 1994 to 1998. And on top of that, he could count on the support of some factions of the military in Istanbul. And as Metin Gurchan has pointed out in an excellent article for Al-Monitor, that was one of the key developments that ultimately decided the fate of the coup. Because if Dündar had not sided with Erdogan and warned him early on, things would have probably looked very differently. After Erdogan had been warned, he quickly went to Dalaman Airport, which is about an hour drive from Marmaris, and headed to Istanbul. And shortly after he left Marmaris, helicopters filled with special forces attacked the hotel where he had been staying. There was a shootout between the rebel soldiers and members of Erdogan's presidential security force who had stayed behind. And you can even watch some of the watch some footage of the fighting, which was later published by Turkish media. So if Erdogan staged the whole thing, he did a pretty good job. At the time of recording this podcast on July 19, two helicopters and 25 special forces that were involved in the Marmaris raid are still missing. And it's not clear how closely Erdogan escaped them. I've seen different reports. Some are saying 20 minutes, others are saying 1 hour, but it was apparently pretty close. And while Erdogan was trying to reach Istanbul, the rest of the world also became slowly aware that something was happening in Turkey. At around 10 p.m. local time, rebel soldiers took control of Istanbul's two main bridges and shut down Atatürk Airport, Erdogan's possible next destination. Shortly thereafter, the coup plotters took control of state broadcaster TRT and forced the anchor woman to read their statement announcing the coup. At this moment, things were looking pretty good for the junta, considering that they had to launch their coup earlier than planned. And most interestingly, during this time, the United States and NATO were awfully quiet and yes. didn't voice any support of Erdogan and the democratically elected government. And not only that, around 11:30 p.m. local time, a senior U.S. military source told NBC that Erdogan had been refused landing rights in Istanbul and was now seeking asylum in Germany. That Erdogan had been refused landing rights in Istanbul made perfect sense because rebel soldiers were still in control of Atatürk Airport. But the asylum story immediately raised red flags. And as far as I can tell, Sibel was the first one to point it out on Twitter. She immediately cautioned people against buying into that story and warned that it could be psychological warfare designed to kill off resistance against the coup. But of course, the information spread like wildfire. And about 30 minutes later, NBC doubled down on its claims, reporting that Erdogan's asylum request has been rejected by Germany and that he is now thought to be flying to London. And this became immediately a running gag on Twitter. People were making all kinds of jokes about this asylum story and not realizing that they were possibly participating in a psychological operation by the US military. Because at that time, Erdogan's plane was still in Turkish airspace, circling in a holding pattern south of the Marmara Sea and waiting for loyal forces to take over Atatürk Airport. And to this day, I haven't seen any confirmation that Erdogan asked for asylum or even permission to land in Germany. And as long as we don't get this confirmation from Erdogan's side, I have to assume that this was a psyop launched by the US military at the height of the coup. And I guess I don't have to explain what that means. And this was not the only thing pointing to American involvement in the coup, as we'll later see. So while NBC was reporting that Erdogan is flying to Germany or London, Erdogan was actually having some problems with rebel F-16s in Turkish airspace. Two F-16s were looking for his plane, but Erdogan's Gulfstream used a Turkish Airlines call sign to disguise itself as a Turkish Airlines flight. And when the rebel F-16s approached and blocked their radars on Erdogan's plane, the pilot told them over radio that they were targeting a Turkish Airlines flight. Obviously, they didn't want to run the risk of shooting down a passenger plane in this situation. And even if they were completely sure that it really was Erdogan's plane, killing him in this situation was not the best option, but rather the last resort. We have to remember they were outside the chain of command and parts of the military, intelligence and security apparatus were already mobilizing against them. They didn't have, they were not able to capture any of the important civilian leaders. They didn't have full control over the media and they lacked public as well as political support. So if they had really killed Erdogan in this situation, the best outcome they could have hoped for was probably civil war in Turkey. So in the end, they decided against shooting down a plane, and Erdogan's Gulfstream stayed south of the Marmara Sea for quite some time, until loyal forces took over Atatürk Airport and enabled him to fly to Istanbul, escorted by loyal F-16s. So the coup plotters were encountering some difficulties in Turkish airspace. For example, one of their helicopters in Ankara was shot down by a loyalist F-16 later that night, which was also a very, very important development. And this had also to do with developments on the ground. After some initial success, things began turning against the coup plotters around midnight. One of their biggest problems was that they had only taken control of state broadcaster TRT at first, while other news channels could continue to broadcast. And this enabled Prime Minister Yildirim, General Dündar, and others to get on public television and denounce the coup. And after Dündar and other military leaders told Turkish media that the coup plotters were only representing a small faction within the military and that they are acting outside the chain of command, the chances of a successful coup began diminishing. And the real turning point was when Erdogan appeared on CNN Turk via FaceTime around 30 minutes after midnight and urged the country to take to the streets. He announced that he is coming to a square in Ankara, which was perhaps intended to fool the coup plotters, And he stressed that this was done outside the chain of command, that the people responsible will be punished, and that Turkey won't be governed from Pennsylvania, which was the first indication that he's directly blaming Gülen. And Erdogan's appearance on scene in Turk and subsequent appeals from Turkey's 85,000 mosques really turned the tide, and rebel soldiers were simply unable to cope with the huge amount of people that took to the streets. Only at this point, as it became clear that the coup would most likely fail, the United States and NATO began voicing support of the democratically elected government. The coup plotters still tried to follow through with their plan, but by that time they were, by the time they were finally taking over CNN and Turk, Hürriyet and other media outlets, it was already too late because they had already lost control of TRT. And the anchor woman, who had read their statements, denounced the coup, surrounded by celebrating people. And in the meantime, forces loyal to Erdogan had also taken over Istanbul Atatürk Airport, enabling him to land there and hold a press conference, where he doubled down on his claims that the Gülenist structure within the Turkish armed forces was behind the coup. And he called on people to resist them and take to the streets. And at this point, it was pretty clear that that the coup would fail, as it then did a few hours later.
Yeah, and we should also point out that many of the coup plotters obviously were also basically telling regular soldiers, you know, okay, yeah, go do this. And many of the soldiers were actually under the impression that this was some sort of a drill or an exercise.
Yes.
So you also have then a lot of young guys. This could have been, you know, their first year or two in the military. Suddenly they're being told to implement some sort of drill or exercise where they're taking over the country, you know, and they're meeting then with these huge, you know, massive groups of protesters, you know, pro Erdogan, and even we should point out too, there were many people in the streets that hate Erdogan that were coming out, you know, for the mere fact that they opposed a military takeover.
Some of Erdogan's supporters looked and behaved like they were straight out of Raqqa or Idlib, so hardcore Islamists. But it's really unfair to the Turkish people to paint them all with the same brush and say this were all just diehard Erdogan lunatics. That's not the case, although some of them really committed horrific atrocities.
Yeah, I don't know if this is true. I saw reports of some of the military guys being beheaded. I don't know if that's hype.
I think one of the pictures circulating of a beheading soldier was actually fake.
Yeah,
but there have been similar atrocities have been committed. Yes.
Definitely, and people can look up some of the pictures online, and you know, we'll probably throw them up in the video. But you've got some of these. It's like 100 naked soldiers tied behind, you know, with their hands tied behind their back. They're, you know, whip marks all over them. They look like they've been abused. So I mean, yeah, obviously this spiraled out of control on both sides. Now, I guess, Christoph, we should get into some of the nuts and bolts of this. And I this might be a first on the podcast, but we might have a little disagreement as to how some of this did actually end up panning out. And of course, I think it's crazy to think that Gülen wasn't involved. We should point out Gülen did not. I don't think Gülen himself, Fethullah Gülen, had anything to really do with this. As Christoph and I pointed out, he's a senile old man. He's in Pennsylvania. You know, it's sort of like saying that, you know, bin Laden from a cave was able to orchestrate 9/11. I don't think a senile old cleric in the Poconos in the middle of the night, no less, was able to run this coup. But certainly, many of, you know, it would make sense that Gülen would be behind, or that the Gülen movement, those associated with him, would be taking part in this. But I guess I still have a few questions about some of this. I know that there's been a lot made in the media, particularly from the mainstream media, that this was really orchestrated by Erdogan, so that he could kind of clamp down on power. And I would say that by and large, that's not a crazy notion. He wouldn't be the first you know, autocratic leader to do something like that. If this was another, you know, obviously that idea is put forth more and more because Erdogan is sort of viewed as negatively in the West. Therefore, that makes sense. But, you know, we would assume that from, you know, other, say, Western puppets, that there might be a false flag coup attempt. But I do wonder the extent to which Erdogan had foreknowledge of this, and if he did, in fact, let the coup happen, knowing that he would then be able to crack down and basically consolidate his already growing power, and finally rid himself of the Gulenist movement. So, I mean, obviously, he had gotten wind of this, and I think it's probably fair to say that this was, you know, this was in the air, this was in the ether. There are definitely hints that something like this could have happened. But Erdogan was able to sort of gain wind of this, and somehow the coup faction found out about this as well. Now, I bring this up because some of the questions I have are, why would Erdogan leave leave Ankara or Istanbul?
He was on holiday in Marmaris.
But I guess my question is that the wisest choice when you know that there's a coup plot that's about to take place? Yeah. So I do wonder if Erdogan kind of got wind of this, knew that he would probably be able to kind of stop it, and if he let it happen. And I don't know, Christoph, what's your take on this?
So first of all, it's of course very interesting that Western media is promoting the theory that Erdogan staged the coup, which is of course a conspiracy theory, as James has, for example, pointed out. And in any other context, they would never promote such a theory. This is only such conspiracy theories are only acceptable when it comes to adversaries of the United States. I think there's a huge difference between staging the coup, as Gulen, for example, suggested in the first interviews that he gave after the coup, and as now many of his supporters and like-minded people are now suggesting and putting forward in the media this theory that Erdogan staged the coup as a kind of Reichstagsfeuer to empower himself, and between having foreknowledge of the coup plot, which I think he did and his people did. They were expecting a coup for quite some time. And, for example, Sibel predicted a coup in Turkey against Erdogan, I think, 6 months ago. And in March of this year, there was a lot of speculation in Turkey among Erdogan's supporters that there was a coup attempt planned against Erdogan. I will just read a few excerpts from a Wall Street Journal article from May 15. Speculation about a military coup reached a fever pitch in late March when Turkish media reports suggested the Obama administration was trying to topple Mr. Erdogan. The rumors led to a terse exchange at the State Department where a Turkish reporter asked spokesman John Kirby whether the US was working to bring down Mr. Erdogan. Are we trying to overthrow the government of Turkey? Is that your question? Mr. Kirby said. It is such a ridiculous claim and charge that I'm not going to dignify it with an answer. Mr. Kirby's response did little to damp speculation. Allies of Mr. Erdogan privately wondered if the US had a covert plan to topple the president, according to people familiar with the matter. 2 days later, while Mr. Erdogan was in Washington, the Turkish military released an unusual statement rejecting baseless speculation about a coup. So this was a few months ago. And in the meantime, Erdogan and his people were working to purge people in the military that they suspected of being tied to the Gulenist movement or of being sympathetic to them, what they term as the Gulenist structure within the Turkish armed forces, in particular within the Turkish air force. And Turkish officials are now putting out a story that I'm not able to confirm if that's true, but that they were about to arrest a lot of people on the weekend of July 16, 17, prompted by the Izmir espionage case. And they, these sources claim that the prosecutor of the espionage case in Izmir had already secured Erdogan's approval to order mass arrests before the approaching Supreme Military Council meeting in early August, which would have decided on the next round of promotions and appointments within the Turkish Armed Forces. So the Gulenist structure within the Turkish Armed Forces, which is real and not an Erdogan conspiracy theory, as some people are apparently thinking, they really had only a few weeks of a window to launch this coup. And if recent Turkish media reports are to be believed, the coup was planned for 3 a.m. later that night. And I think that Erdogan and his team, especially people around Fidan, they knew that the coup were coming. Now they're putting out a story. They knew of the coup at around 4 p.m. and then tried to prevent it. For example, I've seen reports saying that Chief of Staff Akar then sent orders to all army factions to shut down airspace and halt troop movements, which eventually alarmed the coup plotters. We don't know if that's true or if that's just a cover story that they're putting out. I've now seen a report that Erdogan learned of the coup plot at around 8 p.m. that night. It's, of course, quite possible that they were expecting the coup and that they were letting it happen to a certain extent. But the question is, if you are, even if they completely knew what was happening and some of the people who were involved, did they know all the details? Did they know all the generals who were involved? And would they have been able to prevent it if they had tried it? I'm not so sure about that.
Mm. Yeah, no, of course. I mean, I think it is also very early on in this. I mean, you know, all we're getting right now are basically mass arrests, you know, on a pretty unprecedented scale within Turkey. I think I'm the sort of the most up-to-date stuff that I've seen that was reported on RT was President Yildirim says that over 7,000 people so far have been detained, including 6,000 soldiers alone. The court has also remanded 26 generals and admirals in custody. A senior security official told Reuters that 8,000 police officers, including in the capital Ankara and Istanbul, have been removed from duty. 1,500 finance ministry officials have been suspended. CNN Turk is reporting that 30 governors and more than 50 high-ranking civil servants have been dismissed. And this is a crazy one. Annual leave was suspended for more than 3 million civil servants, yeah, while close to 3,000 judges and prosecutors have been suspended. So that is, I mean, the 3 million civil servants, I don't know, that seems great that they're all Gulenists. I mean, it's entirely possible, I guess. Some of these numbers are massive.
They just sacked 15,000 personnel from the Turkish Education Ministry for alleged ties to the Gulen movement. I think the numbers have now something about, if you add all the numbers, we are talking about something 45,000 people who have been purged in the last few days.
Yeah.
That's completely insane. Of course, they're not all linked to the Gulen movement.
Yeah, right. I guess just to be clear out there, obviously, this event is beneficial to Erdogan.
Yes, this alone shows that they were well prepared for this purge. Mm. But we have to point out that they have been doing this kind of purges, not on this scale, but they have been doing purges since late 2013, yes, since the fallout between Gül and Erdogan. Erdogan has removed countless people in the judiciary, in the police. Some of them have been detained, others have just been removed. But these purges have been ongoing, really, for the last 3 years.
Mm. Yeah, and even there's been a big military shakeup as well. So, right. I think, again, important to keep in mind, these are not anything new. Obviously, though, you know, this is a great opportunity to just kind of get rid of a whole lot of people you don't like. I guess, again, kind of playing devil's advocate or looking at this with a different angle in mind is, and this is a question that I'd love to pick your brain on, Kristoff, is would I'm still not entirely convinced that the CIA and NATO would really risk everything and put all their eggs into the basket of Gulen. Now, I think I think it's fair to say that there some aspect of them were involved in this. I think that's, it's just impossible that they couldn't be. But to my mind, it just seems like if this was all, the coup was planned out, CIA and NATO completely behind this, they're ready to go. This is like a Bay of Pigs sort of scenario. This is going to go down in history as one of the worst operations the CIA and NATO could have ever done. Because what has this really gotten them? Suddenly now, you know, my mother knows who Fethullah Gulen is. Average people on the street are aware of who Gulen is right now. Does that really bode well for the CIA? I doubt it. I don't think that they really want people Googling this guy and starting to put together some of the pieces. You know, I mean, how did Gulen get here? Oh, well, Graham Fuller, CIA agent, sponsored him to come here. I just can't imagine that they would really want this much of a light shine down on Gulen. Furthermore, did they really think that average people in Turkey were just going to go with this? I mean, everyone in Turkey knows who Fethullah Gulen is. Everyone knows that his network has infiltrated large swaths of Turkish society. Even if they had, you know, even if they had gotten Erdogan immediately, it would have come out that this was Gulen. Somebody would have, you know, said something about this. You would have gotten this groundswell of hatred. So I really do wonder, obviously the CIA and NATO totally underestimated the general public. You've got video of people walking up to tanks. None of these people had weapons, really. Maybe some bats, tree branches. But they're going out there willing to risk their lives for Erdogan. So I guess there is a nagging thought in my mind that was this sort of a warning to Erdogan from the CIA and NATO, that they maybe knew that this was going to fail, and that perhaps with the sort of changing tides within the world of terrorism, is Gulen not so useful to them anymore? Obviously, he's not in control of this. I think his power within Turkey perhaps is useful, but obviously the traditional countries that the Gulen network has operated in basically is just a cult to recruit jihadis, that seems to have been kind of shut down at every angle. Obviously, Central Asia knows what's going on with Gulen. Russia knows what's going on with Gulen. He is still, there are still Gulenist schools operating in Africa, but that's not quite, you know, the level to which they were operating. So, Christoph, any thoughts on the notion that this maybe was a warning? Because if it wasn't, I mean, the CIA royally fucked up on this one.
I don't think that it was intended as a warning. During the coup, as it unfolded, the United States and NATO took a more wait-and-see approach. At first, not really supporting Erdogan, waiting to see if the coup would succeed or if it would fail. And when they realized it would fail, they came out in support of the government. I think they were also taken by surprise by the whole thing. The main takeaway from this is probably that the coup was planned for a later date, and that it had to be moved forward, and it was then carried out at a time which is probably the worst time that you can carry out a coup, Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and not in the middle of the night. And this affected a lot of things. For example, if this coup had been carried out in the middle of the night and people would have woken up in the next morning and had been things had been done and they would have been confronted with effects on the ground, things would have been very different. So in this kind of situation, the coup plotters didn't get any political support and they didn't get any public support. But in a different kind of situation, if they had carried out this coup with less resistance, I can very well imagine that some faction of the AKP, for example, or someone like former President Abdullah Gül, or even Davut Toglu or the CHP, for example, who have been working behind the scenes with the Green Movement for some kind of alliance for some time now with American Blessing, which is mind-boggling because they are, of course, very secular. I can very well imagine that in a different situation, if this coup had had worked better, that the coup plotters would have found the political support that they were lacking in this situation on Friday night. And this would have made a major difference, of course.
No, I think that's an excellent point. And I'll say that, you know, I know anyone that's following me on Twitter, I was, you know, very skeptical of a lot of this. And I have sort of softened on much of that. I guess my, you know.
I agree with you, Piers. I remember watching this coup in real time, and we were talking about it on Twitter. And at one point I was saying, wait a second, this is so badly organized.
Yeah.
Now that the U.S. played a role.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, no, I know. Yeah, yeah. Me and Christoph were just, I mean, for how, and, you know, bless you, Christoph, because it must have been like 2 a.m. in Germany when this was going on. And you were still tweeting with me about it. But, I think it, I guess, you know, my major takeaway now is just that they, I mean, the CIA and NATO were really caught with their pants down. I mean, they couldn't have screwed up more if they tried to. And now, of course, all they've really done is empower Erdogan. You know, of course he's going to be able to pass any kind of ridiculous legislation that he wants now. You know, all he has to do is, I mean, this is like, you know, this is not on the scale of like a 9/11 or something like that. But of course he's going to benefit from this immensely. You know, he'll be able to pass any sort of security law. You know, he can have show trials. I mean, he's even floating the idea of bringing back capital punishment in the country. And, you know, would he really be opposed within Turkey? I'm not sure. I think there are enough people that are really angry about this. You know, it could happen. I wanted to just pick your brain quickly, Christoph, on a few other things, because there are some interesting other stories sort of floating around. I've seen a bit in both the alt and the mainstream media that this is about Turkey's rapprochement with both Russia and Syria, and that this might be why the CIA and NATO decided to overthrow him. I don't put too much faith in that. I think on the Russian angle, Turkey was just hurt by bad relations with them. And we already saw Turkey, making, you know, gestures towards Russia. With Syria, I can't imagine that they're really going to reverse. I mean, even if they reversed everything and, you know, Erdogan walked to Damascus to, you know, kiss Assad's feet, I don't think Assad is really going to trust him. And even so, I mean, why would we even, why would he even want an ally like that? I find that this gives Erdogan a little bit too much credit in making him the good guy. And I've seen that a bit in the alt media. Suddenly we're all switching alliances and, Erdogan hates the West. And, you know, Erdogan is opposed to the New World Order. So we should support him, which is, I would caution people from going down that road. Yes, obviously Erdogan is didn't want the some faction controlled by the CIA overthrowing him, but that doesn't mean that he's suddenly Gaddafi, you know, or he's some sort of independent leader overnight. You know, he's still a nasty person, and it's okay to say that. I'll also say too, even though Turkey has sort of reinstated relations with Russia, they've also reinstated relations with Israel. So it's not as if they're, you know, completely doing a 180. And for what it's worth, Syrian state news, at last I checked, was reporting that this was, that Erdogan had orchestrated the coup. Interesting thing, Christoph, I want to get your point on. The Iranians are blaming the Saudis and the Qataris. And I think there's a grain of truth to some of that. Interestingly, the Qataris are blaming the Saudis. And we have a Saudi whistleblower, Mujahid, who's blaming the Saudis and the UAE. So what do you make of some of those allegations?
It's quite interesting to see how the coup is being portrayed in different countries. For example, in the West, there are a lot of people who are suggesting that Erdogan staged the coup. In Russian media, not so much. They are suggesting that it was a US coup. And the Russians have been come out come out in support of Erdogan. I'd never thought I'd see the day when Kadyrov, the president of Chechnya, comes out in support of Erdogan. But he actually denounced the coup and supported Erdogan. And he said that the pro-West Turkish Turkish military attempted to overthrow Erdogan for trying to mend fences with Russia. Mm. And just remember, a few weeks ago, Kadyrov called on Erdogan to extradite some of the Chechen terrorists that he is harboring in Turkey. Mm. So that's just one of the funny little things that we are seeing. And the Iranians have been actually bringing the same line that we've seen from AKP media in the last few days, that it was a US-backed coup, and that they have also come out in support of Erdogan. So they are apparently thinking that the rapprochement is real. I'm not so sure about that. Erdogan is, of course, always trying to play both sides in this. But there are a few very important and very interesting details that we haven't talked about. I think one of the most interesting things about the coup is what happened in Turkish airspace that day. For example, there were several rebel F-16s were in the air, as well as helicopters, cargo planes, and most interestingly, as many as 4 Boeing KC-135 Strato tankers took off from Incirlik Air Base to refuel aircraft used in the coup attempt. Just to point this out, Incirlik is jointly used by the Turkish and US Air Force, and is one of the most important US military bases on the planet. And since 2011, Incirlik has played a vital role in NATO's war in Syria, and more recently, the base has been used for the so-called fight against ISIS. But perhaps most importantly, Incirlik houses NATO's largest nuclear weapons storage facility with about 50 B-61 hydrogen bombs. So the United States should know what's going on this base. Well, as it turns out, the Turkish commander of Incirlik Air Base, General Bekir Erdoğan, was involved in the coup attempt. And for some reason, he thought he would get asylum in the United States. But this request was, of course, rejected. On Saturday morning, after the coup attempt, Turkish authorities sealed off Incirlik Air Base, closed airspace around it, and cut off electricity to the base. And on Sunday, General Van and several of his subordinates were detained. Afterwards, the base was reopened, and the U.S. resumed flying missions in Syria. But on Monday, power at Incirlik was still cut off for the third day in a row, and Turkish police searched the base. So the Americans were beginning to worry, what's going on here? Mm. And immediately after Incirlik had been cut off from the outside world on Saturday, people like Brookings President Strobe Talbot, who is, of course, influential member of the U.S. Deep State, and others, they became increasingly worried that Erdogan may actually try to trade Incirlik for Gülen. I don't think that Erdogan will go that far, but that's definitely a thing to keep an eye on. So Erdogan has some leverage, but I don't think that he's going to use it and that he's really going to make a major shift from the US NATO alliance to Russia and Iran.
Yeah, no, and I agree with you. The stuff at Incirlik is, pretty serious. And again, that's as you point out, that's a large NATO base. So, anyone in the U.S. mainstream media, how did they not know that what was going on, or merely what was going on at Incirlik? This notion that Erdogan is suddenly going to, become, form some sort of alliance with Moscow. It seems a little overblown, and I think that's wishful thinking for many. I can't imagine. I think if he really started doing something like that, if he was really holding Incirlik hostage, does he actually want a NATO backed overthrow of his country with the NATO forces on the ground in Turkey? I don't think so. Nobody wants that. When you're talking about having nuclear warheads and stuff, that's what I mean. I just can't imagine that Erdogan is willing to go quite down that road.
Yes, until I see him doing something like this, really holding Incirlik hostage, I don't believe that he is really going over to the to the dark side.
Yes, right. Yeah, exactly. right. And of course, let's you know, we should point out there's a, you know, it's like now everybody is a Gulenist. There was just the allegation that the pilot who shot down the Russian fighter jet that Christoph and I have talked about many times on the podcast, that he was involved in the coup. I find that a little ridiculous because it wasn't as if Turkey, Turkey was openly hostile to Russia. They had no problem with shooting down the plane. And that would sort of negate the fact that Russia was bombing their Turkmen rebel fighters in Syria. What about Çelik? So, you know, so the Grey Wolves and the Gulenists are working together. So I think it's very easy to wrap anybody into this. And that makes it very nice because then they can kind of present that to Russia. Oh, we had nothing to do with this. And again, I think it's you're right there, Christoph, in pointing out that Erdogan loves playing all sides of anything. And let's be fair, he is a pretty good, you know, geopolitical chess player. He's certainly coming out of this on top. And I think he does have some real leverage, if he's careful, to play to the United States. And I don't know, maybe we will see something happening with Gulen. I can't imagine that they would really extradite him. But at the same time, some old fart in Pennsylvania who really, I mean, you know, it's not like, I don't think he's going to be able to spill any secrets. Because he's, you know, his mind is like mush. You know, unless that's all a cover story and he's really totally fine. But maybe they would do something like that. I don't know. I mean, any thoughts on that, Chris? I know that I think the last time I checked, they had just sent over 4 dossiers of evidence to the United States. And very interestingly, Prime Minister Yildirim, who's really kind of come out as Erdogan's attack dog, he was kind of a bitching about, oh, well, I don't even know why they need evidence. You know, they know about it. And he had a very telling quote where I don't have it up right in front of me, but we'll link up to it in the show notes for this. But he said something to the effect of, you know, the U.S. didn't ask any questions when they wanted terrorists in 9/11. And he made a very bizarre comment about, I don't know why they're asking questions about Gulen when they didn't ask questions about Osama bin Laden. Maybe sort of a hint we know something. At the same time, of course, you've got Erdogan hanging out with Yasin al-Qadi, so I don't know if he really wants to go down that road, because there's a lot of dirt on him would not make him look so great. But Christoph, any kind of final thoughts on the coup? Obviously, it's very early still. We're going to have to wait and see what's going on. But any final thoughts or little things you think the listeners should check out?
So I've seen just a report by CNN today that Prime Minister Yildirim told CNN apparently that they have now formally requested Gulen's extradition from the United States. So we'll have to see what happens there. The Turkish foreign minister is flying to Washington this week to talk with high-level U.S. officials, probably about Gulen and not about the fight against ISIS. And we'll have to see what happens there. I'm not so quite sure. Gulen is not really that important as for him. He personally is not that important, but what he represents, he is, of course, the symbol of the Gulen movement. Mm. So handing him over would be a huge blow to the whole network. And we have to remember, this network is still operating in more than 100 countries and is still estimated at several billion, I don't know, 25 billion around that. It's not just the Gulen schools in Central Asia that are used for, that were used. I'm not sure if they are still used for these jihadi operations, but there's a huge business empire behind, a pro-US, pro-Israel business empire that is very useful, that is very influential, especially in shaping public opinion in the West, as we are seeing now in the aftermath of the coup attempt. Many people are buying into the line that is being promoted by Gulenist followers. And just handing Gulen over, I think, would be the wrong choice on part of the United States. I don't think that they are going to do this very easily. I think they are going to insist on getting real evidence from Turkey. And when Turkey hands over real evidence, they are going to say, no, that's not enough evidence, despite the FBI having more than enough evidence to lock this guy up for eternity. But yes, that's, of course, one of the things to keep an eye on. And just to pick up on what you just said about this blaming the shootdown on the Russian jet on the Gulenist movement, that's, of course, one of the most interesting things that we've seen in the aftermath. I think the mayor of Ankara was one of the first ones to point out that one of the people involved in the coup also participated in the downing of the Russian jet. And this actually led Russian media to assume that he was talking about our old friend Alparslan Çelik. And that's why I dismissed it at first, because it didn't make much sense and there were no reports confirming it. But as it turns out, he was apparently not referring to Çelik, but to one of the Turkish pilots who was involved in the ambush of the Russian jet over Syria. And yesterday, reports emerged saying that one of the pilots who was flying one of the rebel F-16s during the night of the coup was the same pilot who shot down the plane. And shortly thereafter, a Turkish official announced that not just one, but two pilots who were involved in the downing of the Russian jets have now been detained over the failed coup. So this raises a whole lot of questions. At first sight, as you rightly pointed out, it looks like Erdogan is trying to kill two birds with one stone. He can just blame the downing of the Russian jet on the Gulenist coup plotters and claim that he had nothing to do with it all. But given that Erdogan initially defended the downing and even took credit for it, this looks, of course, completely ridiculous. I was actually in Istanbul when the Turks shot down the plane, and I remember quite clearly how the reaction was. The downing of the jet was almost being celebrated. Mm. And Erdogan and his administration insisted that the jet had violated Turkish airspace. They were forced to shoot it down. The Russians were portrayed as the evil aggressors who are constantly violating Turkish airspace, who are killing civilians in Syria. And this had, of course, a huge effect on public opinion in Turkey. For example, a poll in Turkey in May showed that almost 60% supported the downing of the Russian jet, and most of them said they support the move because it shows that Turkey is a big country. And this has, of course, a lot to do with how Erdogan and his supporters portrayed the incident in the immediate aftermath. Erdogan was portrayed as the strong leader who is not only defending the borders of his country, but also the poor Turkmen rebels in Syria who are being bombed by the Russians for no apparent reason. Mm. So it looks rather dubious when Erdogan is now suggesting that he's completely innocent. The whole thing was an evil plot by the Gulen movement. But if Turkish officials are telling the truth, and one or even two of the pilots who were involved in the downing of the Russian jet really participated in the attempted coup, this has enormous implications. And it lends credence to a theory that pro-government media started promoting shortly before Turkey began making serious moves to mend fences with Russia. In late March, early April, they began claiming that the Gulenist structure within the Turkish Air Force was behind the downing of the Russian jet in an attempt to harm Turkey. And we actually talked about this in one of our previous podcasts where we discussed Turkish-Russian relations. And at that time, I completely dismissed this theory as Erdogan propaganda, AKP propaganda. But if the Turkish officials now are telling the truth, that's, of course, a different story. And
oh, that would be huge.
Yeah.
Well, again, I you know, just anytime you have an event like this, you do have to wait and see. There's a lot of people out, you know, on Twitter and in all sorts of media making, you know, very firm statements and assertions. And I think it's always important to kind of take a step back and also just to be able to look at this from different angles. As we said earlier, when me and Christoph were first looking at this, we thought this couldn't have been the U.S. at all. So it's important to, you know, remove yourself a little bit, not to get so, you know, excited emotionally about events like this, because it is in geopolitics, I think it is good to kind of to try to be as objective as possible. And again, You know, I don't think Erdogan
is going to... We should probably point out that we hate Erdogan. And
yeah, exactly. That's what I want to say. Yeah, right. Yeah, even if Erdogan all of a sudden, you know, became the, you know, he was the face of the, you know, the movement against NATO and the New World Order, I still wouldn't like him or support him at all. He is a thug. He is a nasty person who, you know, I think he really just wants power. You know, and again is willing to, I think, sell out anybody that gets in his way. So yeah, important. Me and Christoph don't like Erdogan. The same way, like when we talk about Russia, that doesn't mean we like Putin or something like that. And again, we need to really wait and see, because while it is possible that there is some sort of realignment going on, as unlikely as I think that is, I think it's very likely that you know, things like this, there's a lot of open rhetoric that you see on both sides, but these sort of things are not hashed out in the media. These are hashed out, you know, behind closed doors. So I'm sure that, you know, there are some very high level meetings going on between Turkish and U.S. officials, and that's really where this is going to be resolved. It's not going to be resolved in, you know, Gulen being extradited and put on trial in Turkey, you know, for all the world to see. That's not really going to happen. Again, obviously, they're fine with having NATO operations running out of Incirlik. So, I mean, that couldn't have been that bad. So again, you know, we will have to wait and see. But again, this was, you know, this was an episode we did on the fly. So I hope that everyone enjoyed it. Of course, if you want to support Christoph and I in the work that we do, we have our Patreon campaign is up, and this will of course be a Patreon episode. So everybody that has subscribed to Patreon, thank you so much. We already have a few right now. Of course, you can find all of our work on PorkinsPolicyReview.com. You can also find this podcast and all of Christoph's writing at ChristophGehrman.blogspot.com. And you can always follow both of us on Twitter, which I encourage everybody to do, because we have definitely been tweeting quite a bit. And you can follow me at Porkins Policy, and you can follow Christoph at New Great Game. Well, Christoph, I know we'll be talking soon, but thanks for joining me for this special episode.
Thanks, Pius.